If you anger your engineer, if you make this person mad, if you alienate them, if you disrespect them in any way, you will not ever win a job. Us having to do something room by room, we don't know it any other way. So if I don't know that that's a problem, you can't convince me I have a problem I don't know that I have, or I don't believe that I have.
Welcome to Software Defined Survival. My name is Patrick Murray, and today's guest has held account management roles with companies like Utelligy, Pro Video Solutions, and Ford Audio Video. Now, as a programmer, as a designer, as a technician, sales may not be at the top of the list of the most interesting things for you. There's usually a bit of a disconnect between the sales and technical teams, and for the most part, technical teams aren't aware of everything that goes into finding new customers and really maintaining and nurturing those relationships. But the more I learn on this podcast about how software is changing the business of AV, the clearer it becomes how critical sales and marketing really is to everything that we do. So I'm really looking forward to learning more about creating new business from Michelle Lorette. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Is there anything about that introduction that you'd like to correct or explain?
No. I mean, it's all good. Yeah, I am definitely on the sales side. I do like technology. I consider myself a technology geek. I came to this industry from the structured cabling industry, which was very boring. But I knew time and materials, right? I didn't understand the engineering side of the equation. It was a little bit, I call it the dark arts, right, of AV. And I didn't understand the programming and commissioning sides. And I thought it was very, very interesting. I like the idea of working with active components and kind of continuing my education. And it was within my first year at Ford. Ford AV was really wonderful at educating their salespeople, even if they were AV idiots like myself. And I remember sitting in a class on projection, and sure enough, they brought up the Pythagorean theorem. And I thought, wow, I really owe my software geometry teacher an apology, because I remember saying to him very specifically, I'll never need to use that. And as I sat at Ford AV back in 2011, I thought, he was right and I was wrong. I am going to need to use that. Who knew? Because there's so many math formulas in AV. But it's a great industry. I love being in it. It's really fun.
Cool. Yeah. It's I see that a lot, right? I have two children there in school and it's all boring and useless. But once you have an application, it's like, right, how do we launch a rocket into the air? Then things get interesting. And in the end, you wind up doing math anyway. So that's pretty cool when you're trying to align a projector, geometry becomes.
It all goes back to math. Yeah. There's even especially on the acoustic side, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little more about how you got started in AV. I like that. I like to hear the origin story of how people wound up here. Was that first at Ford AV? How did you wind up?
Well, it was a little bit before that, but I would call that AV adjacent. So I'd worked at Gray Bar, and after Gray Bar, I worked in distribution on the datacom side, as they call it. And I then went to work for Molex within their structure cabling division. And their largest vertical was automotive, because they, by trade, are component manufacturers. And so, you know, whether it's like the wire harness on your car engine, you know, there's all these electronics now and a million other connectors. And unfortunately, in 2009, that was not a good time to have your largest vertical, as, you know, they're being bailed out and the big banks are being bailed out and we have this huge economic crash. And so there was a gentleman that had been one of my coworkers. And he knew a guy who knew a guy that owned a voiceover IP platform, and he wanted to offer all of his dealers a soft codec for video conferencing that they could sell the small and medium businesses that they were selling their voiceover IP solution.
In 2009.
And so he said, hey, you want to work for him? And I was like, oh, let's figure it out. And so it was a just straight commission, and the product, we took it from alpha to beta. I was not on the programming side, but I was on the let's see if it works side. Okay. And so me and a gentleman named Mike Fannin still worked really closely. They were up in Michigan. And sure enough, they built a soft, and back then a video with the Y, that was like my heroes. I was like, oh, that's what we want to be, right? That's who I was able to point to as a non-AV person, mm-hmm. not knowing any better. And, and I did know about life size, which I also thought, oh my God, that's brilliant. That's amazing. And I knew some people that were reps, and I was telling all my friends in the voiceover IP world and the telephony world, y'all should be selling this life size stuff, not knowing that the Pro AV channel was like, you know, kind of like video conferencing snobs and didn't really want to give life size the time of day, you know, because it wasn't Tamberg and it wasn't Polycom, because you don't know what you don't know, right? So we worked, and then once we got the Appia software-based video conferencing client stable, and then we've got it robust, I started going out, and they wanted me to sell to small and medium businesses, and I'd only sold to enterprise clients. I was an end-user rep at Graybar, and I was like, oh, it's just as easy to love a big customer as a small customer, and it's pretty much the same amount of heavy lifting, but what's the potential end game? So I went out, and I found some clients. But they needed to know, they needed it like tuned to some product. And I was like, oh, so I came back to the team and I go, well, they like the platform, but they need like, what's it going to run on? And so they were like, oh, we can do that too. And so they worked with another company, and then we had Sony displays. We kind of did like a mobile cart type solution is what okay. it evolved into. And mm-hmm. we had a robust Dell PC with all the right cards. And then I ran into the audio issue. Because all we had was, you know, a microphone that only had a certain length of tail. And if it was, I was having to drag it down a 20-foot conference table. And so then we paired it with Revo Labs. And that's how I became friends with my buddy Monty. Because even though I was a nobody, I was basically an independent operator. When I called and said, I have this issue, can you help me solve this problem? He would treat me just as if I was calling from Whitlock or AVISPL or one of the big boys. Like, you know, he was just a good guy to everybody. And so we hit it off because I was running a PC base. And I was like, why doesn't Revo focus on this? And he was like, there's just not a demand. And I'm like, but don't you think this is where everything's going? And I'm not Nostra AV Domus, and I'm not proclaiming to be. I was AV ignoramus, right? Or AV adjacent. And it's funny because if they had listened to me back then, they probably would have been ahead of the game. They still got sold to Yamaha, but nonetheless, it's a good story. And then I was getting a little tired of that. It had been a fun ride, but it wasn't very lucrative. And I kind of depleted my savings, which is an ongoing pattern of mine of investing in something great and, you know, sweat equity. And then I got a call from a recruiter at Ford AV. And I met with my boss, and Mr. C was a great guy. And he said, we really want you on the team. And I was like, well, there's going to be a bit of a learning curve. He said, that's fine. You'll do fine. And I said, no, I know it will. So I took a job with Ford. I was really lucky. They were highly structured, which I couldn't stand, but which makes them very profitable. Yeah. And they keep their salespeople on a short leash, which is probably not a horrible business practice, but I don't like that at all. But they're wonderful at educating. And I got a great education there. I had an opportunity. They really invest in their people. And I will forever be grateful to them for that. You know, because you can't put a price on knowledge. And so I remember sitting in an AMX training and just writing down copious notes. I didn't know what a DSP was. I didn't know anything, right? You know, and somebody said to me, well, we'll send you the PowerPoint. And I was like, no. I need to write this. And years later, going back and finding that notebook and reading back through like my 3.5 pages of notes.
Oh, wow.
And I actually knew what it all meant. Because when I was writing it down, I had no idea what I was talking about. I was just writing it down, whatever they were saying. And so that was kind of rewarding. I was like, oh, this is good. I did that. But integration is very challenging. And even though, you know, a lot of integrators do a great job and Ford does a great job, I just found it very frustrating on my part. I'm a little bit of a control freak.
What was frustrating? Do you have some examples?
Oh, Well, you're part of a construction project, right? Yeah. And so I had worked on the structured cabling side in construction, but I was either responsible just for delivering the gear or just delivering the people, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I had been a recruiter with Nesco specializing in cabling technicians. I had worked for Graybar. I'm selling them their, you know, 5 million feet of cable and all the connectivity that goes with it. But in integration, you know, it's got to be successful. It has to work.
Right.
And it's very complicated. And there are other factors. And you're always getting squeezed. You know, I mean, you're going in like after the carpet people or whatever, or after the cabling people have already stolen all your pathways, or, oh, did you need a floor enclosure? You know, and you're like, how do we overcome this obstacle? You know, and so, but yeah, they never want to give you any more time. And then they want you to change something and you go, well, that's a change order. And then they want to argue about it. And you're like, look, I'm just telling you, this was the scope of work and this is our, you know, and sure. So there's a certain nuance to how that handles and who's in charge of the purse strings and stuff. I mean, it was rewarding once as every project is, once it's successfully completed.
Yeah.
But it's just, you're constantly in firefighter mode, no matter how prepared you are. You can be the most prepared integrator. Success is not on what problem comes up, because there will always be problems, period. You can be operating at your A++ game. Problems are going to arise. It's how you resolve those problems. And that's just exhausting. You know, I mean, constantly troubleshooting, firefighting every single day. What fire am I putting out? What problem am I solving? It's a little bit easier for me on the manufacturing side, I think, because I have control and I can leverage internal resources, or even on the manufacturer rep side. Because a lot of times people would reach out to me because they already have that working relationship. And I'd say, well, have you called the manufacturer? Even though they have a bat line to the manufacturer, they're one of their top three dealers, right? And the poor guy's had 5 truck rolls and he's just never bothered to call.
Sure.
And I'm like, what's the problem? And then I call and I get an answer in 3 minutes, you know? And I'm like, gosh, you could have saved yourself and your employer 40 hours, you know? And gosh, don't do that.
Yeah. So can we circle back a little? That's a really cool career arc. I like the way how the development of a new product kind of landed you through Revo Labs into AV. That's really interesting. My favorite story about scheduling conflicts on a job site is being scheduled on the same day as the floor sander to balance the audio. Right?
That's a wonderful time.
It's not going to happen, right?
That's the perfect time. Yeah. You balance it to the sound, to the floor sander, the decibel of the, yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. So you mentioned something about a bit of nuance in handling those types of situations. And yeah, if it's going to be a change order, do you have any advice, tips on experience on how to handle those things?
Well, whenever somebody, I was successful.
Besides running away.
I know, right? Well, I was successful in having an understanding of where my project was budgetarily wise, from all aspects, right? You know, how's it going? Are y'all over budget? That type of thing. Whether I'm getting that information from the GC or whether I'm getting it directly from the end user, based on what's been reported to them. And so whenever they ask for a change, I'm like, great. I'll have to get back to you, let you know how much that cost. And then they say, cost? And I say, well, yep, there's a cost associated because of X, Y, and Z. So I always said yes, because people have the power of positivity. But sometimes they would ask you to do things. I mean, I had one, it was a council chambers, and the architect, interiors architect, had actually chosen where our speakers would go. So you've got 3 sections, you've got 2 aisles, and they rightly chose the proper placement. But because the speakers were not aligned with the lights in the room, I had the IT guy, who is not a lighting specialist, nor is he an acoustician, on a hard deck drop ceiling that had already been cut, say, oh no, I don't like where those speakers are. You need to move them. But I knew that they were already over budget, right? Because their MEP consultant had told them they did not need a second generator and they were in an area with rolling brownouts. And they did end up needing one if they wanted to keep their data center operational when the electricity went out. So, you know, they were already in this predicament that it, you know, they were about $900,000 over because that's how much big commercial generators cost. And depending upon what kind you go with, all the way up to like $1.5 billion for the size of their space. And oh, well, there's a cost. And I go, well, a couple of things, William. First of all, we didn't choose the placement. However, I did have my audio guys double check, and the interiors person, strangely enough, did put the speakers in the right place. Secondly, we didn't cut the holes. You already had, you know, your sheetrock guys with that did the hard deck ceiling cut the holes. So now all those holes are going to have to be recut. They're all going to have to be repatched, and you're asking us to put them in a space where the audio won't be balanced in the room. So I can do all that, although it's bad practice and a horrible idea, but absolutely there's a cost associated.
Right. So analyze where you are and talk about it, right?
Just yeah. Well, and the facts, just the facts. That's all. I get that aesthetically you're looking at something visually that has nothing to do with acoustics, right? You know, I mean, I'm sorry. It can't help you there, man. You
know, it's a hard thing to describe sometimes, like, you know, why, well, things have changed. There's next generation ceiling microphones now, but it was hard to explain to an architect why ceiling mics are not a good idea because I don't want it on the table.
Right.
And that's part of the education, which I guess is marketing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Educating people, creating brand awareness, making people know you're out there. You know, one of my strategies when I was in integration, I would see that somebody had moved into a space. I would reach out to them. I would say, I know that you love your current integrator. I know getting the last 10% of the project done, completed, that punch list is the hardest. At some point, you're going to be furious and pissed off with your integrator. And when you are, I work for XYZ integrator. So do you mind if I get your contact information? I'll just send you mine for when that day comes. So you got a backup plan. And I actually had an IT guy answer the phone when I called through the switchboard, shockingly. And he goes, yeah, we have been in here 3 months. No, I hate my current integrator. And when can you meet with me? And of course, I fell out of my chair because that never happens, right? Yeah. But I was like, oh, I can come meet you right now. And he was like, well, no, you don't have to come right now. And I was like, no, you don't understand. They don't let you leave unless you have a scheduled appointment. So my appointment with you is literally in 20 minutes. I'm on my way. I just have to document this in the CRM.
Very true nice. Story. Yeah. Great tactics there.
I know, right? It happens. The struggle is real. It is.
For sure. So you mentioned when you got started at Ford AV that the training was great.
Oh, exceptional. Absolutely. So
what are some things about sales training? Is there anything particular for AV that you look for? What makes a good training in AV?
Well, I think one of the things that I thought was very good for them and is a skill set that I don't utilize because I don't need to very often. They taught us how to do a great site survey. And if you don't want to be a four-legged salesperson, I don't have to be the best engineer in the world. I just have to be a good listener, right? And I just have to ask the right questions, capture the information that the engineer needs, and provide them with as much documentation as possible. So I would I would have anywhere from 30 to 50 pictures for every retrofit job site, right? That I was, you know, because if it's new construction, they just have to look at the plans. But if it's a retrofit or an upgrade scenario, I mean, yeah, you got to get on a ladder or hop on their conference room table, hopefully in your stocking feet, pop a ceiling tile, get your selfie stick and your camera up there. You want pictures of all the OFE so your guy can determine if it's still relevant or if it's end of life, if it's still supported. They need to see how messy their cabling is. They need to see it all. So yeah, you got to get under credenzas and you've got to go in the back of racks and you've got to capture all that information. And they did an exceptional job. And I think one of the weaknesses is that we oftentimes, you know, engineers are expensive resources and you've got to utilize their time wisely. It's not good to waste their time. And I think it's important as a salesperson, you can become a subject matter expert. And sometimes engineers have a bad habit. They immediately want to start talking about product. And as a salesperson, you're just supposed to be capturing the use case. How are you going to use this room? How is the space utilized? What is your corporate culture? And sometimes if you got an engineer, their head's already spinning. And so they might start talking to product or something along those lines. I've seen that happen before. And it's like, no, we're not here to talk about that. You know, we'll get to that on our side because the customer will go along that journey, but that's a rabbit hole. And sure. We go down enough rabbit holes on our own. We don't need to take our customers down a rabbit hole. It's mm-hmm. just not necessary.
So this sales versus engineering, do you have any ideas about how to balance that kind of a culture and just keep it all healthy? Because there's no one without the other, really.
Oh, gosh, no. Oh, no. They have to be harmonious. Well, I think salespeople, they need to respect engineering. I mean, I've seen some people that come into the pro AV and they didn't grow up in our industry, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't understand if you anger your engineer, if you make this person mad, if you alienate them, if you disrespect them in any way, you will not ever win a job because they're not being graded on whether or not your customer accepts your proposal. But they can build a Fiat or they can build a Cadillac with a gold grill and diamonds. And they can over-engineer something as well. So you've got to work well. This person is crucial to your success, period, end of story. I mean, they need to be your number one priority over your boss, quite frankly. You know, I mean, they are the glue. They are the machine. They are the brilliant mind, right? And you have to develop a rapport with those engineers. Mm-hmm. And learn from them and trust them. I mean, you know, if you're already up to speed and you're already, you know, a technologist, an AV technologist, and you understand how everything works, then you already know this, or you probably wouldn't still be in the industry. Because I've seen people not understand and they don't get that memo and they don't last very long because sure. You're not going to be successful. So yeah, yeah, just mutual respect.
So sales communicating the needs to engineering. Absolutely. And yeah. Engineering obviously being receptive to that information.
Well, I find the engineers get most frustrated when there's two types of engineers. There's engineers that like being customer facing, right? And some of them even go into sales and are very successful. Yeah. Others still just want to be engineers. They just are a people person. And then there's the other 70% that they, please don't make me talk to the customer. Isn't that your job? You know, I just want to engineer stuff, right? That's my comfort zone. That's what I like. And so I would say, you know your place, know your people. Everybody's different. Know what they like and they don't like. I would say lack of information is the one thing that really makes an engineer upset. When you come and you don't have a really defined scope of how the customer is utilizing these spaces and what their goals are and what their desires are, you know? So if I say, oh, my client still wants to use, you know, they want to keep their Clear One Zaps, even though they've been, you know, end of life and not supported for, I don't know, 8 years. That engineer is going to be able to say, some OFE we are able to keep, Michelle, but here's our learning moment. That's not one of them. You'll need to communicate that to the client. Right? It's not in their best interest, but it still works. I mean, that's what they told me, you know? And so it's one of those where knowledge, if you want them to design something, because what happens in some companies, when something doesn't go right on a project, they have to document why there's a change being made, right? Why this extra part had to be, and one of them has a code, an EE, an engineering error. Well, that translates into everything gets blamed on the engineer.
Sure.
But a lot of times it's not the engineer's fault if they're not given that information. Right information. Right. You know, and so that's why, you know, you give them some, I don't know, chicken scratch. Oh, yeah, here's a bunch of stuff and blah, blah. No, you have to explain to them. You're there to translate the customer's vision because it's going to start with what they want, what they need, and what they can afford. And then you as a salesperson have to be able to explain what those trade-offs are. So if you, and sometimes you have to play games with the client just in order to get them to the truth because no one wants to be sold to, but everybody likes to buy. So if they've got a completely round, divisible training room and you say, what's your budget? And they say, we don't have a budget. So what I would do is I would go to my engineer and I'm like, they've got like a half glass, completely round, divisible training room. And he's like, God, that's a horrible idea, right? Because yeah. it's a mixed minus nightmare. And I'm like, just spitballing it, what is this going to cost? And he's like, at least 55 grand. I'm like, okay, great. So I go back to the guy that doesn't have a budget. And I say, hey, we can't design stuff without a budget. Like he's not even allowed to touch it, my engineer, right. Because we can give you good, better, and best, right? So sure. What I need to know is if I told you this cost $100,000, is that going to fly? oh, that sounds too expensive. I'm like, yeah, you're right. It is too expensive. We could design you one that costs that, but that is too, you don't have to pay that. What if I said 75,000? Is that a little bit more acceptable? That still sounds high. I'm like, yeah, it is. What about 50? Well, that sounds more reasonable. I'm like, good, because it's about 50 to 55,000. So if you can agree on that, then now we can proceed. But it's going to cost about that. So let's, I can't waste my precious resources just on some pricing expedition. So I've kind of given you a rough order of magnitude. You've let me know that's okay. Do you agree that if we design to this magnitude, and we'll try to save you money if we can, where we can. Right. But it's all going to cost more than you going to Fry's and installing something yourself, which is what your current model is.
Well, it'll work better too.
I know, right? It's hard when you got the DIYers. I mean, I appreciate, you know, their ingenuity and their, you know, get it done-ness, but yeah, it's just different when you have a professional doing it. Absolutely.
For sure. So obviously, right, the past couple of years, software is playing more of a role. And even when you got started in 2009, you were working with soft codecs.
Yeah, I know.
Right. So there's two directions.
Full circle.
And there's more and more questions about why can't we just use a normal computer for video conferencing? So this real whole idea of software defined and obviously for control, computers have become commoditized at this point. There's, in my opinion, nothing special about a control processor.
Nope, there's not.
How easy it is to integrate with certain products, but a program can run pretty much anywhere at this point. So,
oh yeah,
what are your thoughts on how software defined has changed the business of AV as you experience it in the sales role, internal communications, and things like that?
I think leveraging software is critical. I think it is become very powerful, and that's going to be continue to be our march. I don't know. I think you're asking the wrong question because I don't think we're software defined yet. And that's something you and I have never discussed before.
We could be, right?
We can be.
Technologically, we're there. It's possible.
Yes, absolutely. It is there, and somebody's going to get there first. But
that general computer that runs Zoom or Zoom Room.
Look, networks and voice over IP is software defined, right? Those are software defined solutions, but that's the difference. If I plug in a Cisco phone, the network's going to know it's a Cisco phone. It's going to know what priorities it has. It's going to configure the port, right? There's not a physical person. And we're still in the AV world. We're used to working with proprietary code, right? Versus ubiquitous code. And as a result, we're used to taking disparate manufacturers and making all of them work together harmoniously in a robust and stable way that maximizes the uptime and the user experience. Whew, can you tell I'm a salesperson? So that's great. But when we say software defined, it becomes a little bit buzzy. And sure. I know that's the name of your podcast, so I'm not insulting you. I do not want you to take this.
I'm okay with it.
Okay, good. But, you know, I mean, software defined is a term created by VMware back in the early aughts, right? So here we are, we're almost to 2020, you know, right. In that direction. And I think to an IT person, that means that that the software will do all the configuring. And because we're used to configuring things ourselves in Pro AV, we don't see that as an issue. And I think an IT person would find that as an issue. Because why are you calling yourself software defined when I still have to configure you? Because my other things that are software defined, I don't have to configure. They auto-configure
they
themselves.
Work.
Yeah, because if I already have... So in a perfect world, if I already have a ZV encoder, and I plug in another ZV encoder, it should say, we already have this set up, and how do we already have this set up and deployed everywhere else in the system? We'll go ahead and by default automatically set this up so it operates in the same exact way that it's set up everywhere else. And then if I need to change something based on where the new one is set up, then I can go in and modify that, but it would already have its default. We're not there yet. We're getting there.
Why not? Is it there's not enough scale? Because when I think about what you're talking about, right, like my iPhone, the Maps app, just it does everything. It knows where I am. It cooks up with my calendar. It does everything for me because the scale is, you know, all high.
Because our iPhones are software defined. Because if I get a new iPhone What do
it
I do?
Doesn't matter. Yeah.
I sync it to the old one. I pair it and then everything. And then it acts exactly like the other one. I didn't have to go into a control panel, a management portal. Right. I didn't have to tell it. I didn't have to reload all my apps. I didn't have to re-enter any of my passwords.
Sure.
They're all stored there. That's software defined.
And so AV manufacturers are operating at a different scale than Apple is. Is
absolutely.
Is that the reason or is it? Just distance from the way we do things.
We never truly needed to be software defined.
Nobody's asking for it.
Because the way we've already always done it is we go to every room and then we upgrade every touch panel because the logic resides in the touch panel, right?
Yeah.
So us having to do something room by room, we don't know it any other way. So if I don't know that that's a problem, you can't convince me I have a problem. I don't know that I have, or I don't believe that I have. It's like, well, this is the way it's always done. So that's not really a big deal.
And customers, owners of this technology aren't aware of it because of reputation.
Well, they're paying somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
Now, I think some are a little bit more aware. I mean, just of all the higher ed universities that I've worked with recently, a good 70% were Extron in most of their spaces. And their tier one support was actual students, right? Student workers, sure. Right? That make up their help desk and they're making money and getting an education and learning, you know, OJT and all that other good stuff. And they're all like Extron certified. And that's the way they've been taught and they don't have a problem with it. But if they're computer science students, they probably think we're kicking it a little old school, a little Pascal, a little Fortran. Right. For a little COBOL and it's not Y2K anymore. So we don't have to worry that there's not a zero, you know? And so they're looking at it like, well, because we liked being different. Being different meant we were proprietary. Proprietary commands a premium because you can't do it for yourself. But it's unfortunately, that's all changing. I mean, it's changing with our own manufacturers, right? That have only been beholden to the channel, pre-baked solutions, USB doesn't require an integrator, deploy it yourself. Sure. Oh my God, that hurts my heart, you know, or, and you don't even have to buy it from the integrator anymore. Oh, CDW. I mean, we've always hated on B&H, but now, yeah, there's a whole list of others that we can hate on because that happened to me with ClickShare. I got furious. I had worked with NASA for 6 months and someone with purchasing went and bought them all through CDW. But guess who they called for support?
Me. You were still
because I was the manufacturer rep, right? Yeah. And I was the one that had been working with them. And I'm like, oh, well, what integrator? Because I knew the three integrators that they normally worked with. I'm like, oh, I didn't know the order even went through. You know, what integrators were you working with? Oh, let me find out. Oh, purchasing got it through CDW. I was like, I'm not going to tell NASA they have to call CDW and not get the support. You know what I mean? So then the onus is still on me, but it's frustrating because you want to still support them, but it's like you've got no skin in the game. So now you're leading with your altruism for hope that because they still, you know, you still provide a value to them that when it gets to maybe the bigger and better things, they'll still call you. You'll still be a trusted resource or whatever.
You still have the relationship, yeah.
Yeah, you still have the relationship. And maybe you do a little re-educating on if they still want your love, please don't let purchasing buy through CDW. I don't know, you know, it's a... And I'm not hating on CDW. They're a wonderful company, by the way. I'm not. I just... From the integration side.
Yeah, it's part of what's happening. So software defines whatever that means to you, just the commoditization of hardware,
yeah,
capabilities of what these devices can do. It has an effect on the channel, basically.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that and then now we've got other people because things do become easier. There's other people that want a seat at the table.
Yeah.
Because maybe, you know, if I'm in structured cabling and I just do bid jobs all day long outside of my move, add, and change business, maybe I'm just making 8 in freight. So, wow, if I can make 18 points in Pro AV, why don't I add that to my line card? How hard is that, right? I don't know. You know, so now you've got people that are in other areas of low voltage, and some have done it forever. I mean, I've got 4 or 5 companies just in my backyard in Houston, Texas, that all started in structured cabling 30 plus years ago. And they've all done AV in one form or another over the last, you know, 10 to 20 years. So I'm not making light of that, you know, and they also do other things, distributed antenna systems, and some of them have security divisions. But you've got security and fire alarm people selling pro AV. So you've got other people within the low voltage space that are like, well, our stuff is harder than your stuff, so we can do your stuff now because your stuff has gotten so much easier because now it's pre-baked and, you know.
So is that a good thing? Is that going to force us to, yeah, evolve, or what are your thoughts on where things are headed?
Oh, gosh. That's a tough one.
I can't change it, right? Genie's out of the bottle.
Yeah, the genie is out of the bottle. It's been out of the bottle. I mean, I remember a lunch and learn a mere 2 years ago, well, 3 years ago, 2.5, I'll split the difference. And I had one of the engineers go, I just don't know if this AV over IP thing is a thing. And I'm like, oh my God, you're 35 years old. I cannot believe you just said that to me.
Wow.
Like, are you kidding? I was like, I dude at him because I do that sometimes. I'm like, dude, this ship has sailed. It's been a thing. It's been a thing for like half a decade. I mean, yeah. I went to Pro Video in 2012. My Clear One engineer, Tim Mackey, had come from NetStreams, right, on the residential side, which Clear One had acquired.
Yeah. Audio over IP.
He talked about Vue, which was video, right? He talked about Vue. That's all he talked about. All he talked about was AV over IP, AV over IP. And I mean, to his credit, everybody's eyes still glazed over. But I just didn't understand why everybody didn't get it. I was like, no, I love this. I came from this world.
Sure.
So I know not to say Cat 5, even though nobody in Pro AV finds that offensive. But because we don't install Cat 5 anymore. Do you not know the difference between Cat 5 and Cat 5e? They're different.
Sure.
Cat 6 and 6a are different. You know, and people, and when you say that to AV people, they kind of look at you like, I can't even believe there's such a thing as a cabling snob. It's not a cabling snob. It's just, I don't want you to look uneducated, like you don't even know what levels of category cable are still in use.
Yeah,
you wouldn't say Cat 3. I'd rather you say Cat X than Cat say X, Cat 5. Yeah. But they all say Cat 5. And then when you go, oh, no, 5E, they're like, meh, like, God, calm down, girl. Like, it's not a big deal.
But structured cabling is acceptable, right?
Absolutely, all day long, because it is structured cabling. You know, but they're not using Category 5. Why do you want to
date yourself?
Date yourself, make yourself look uneducated, like you don't know what you're talking to, because who's your audience now?
Who is the audience?
Right?
It's IT, more and more.
Absolutely. Or a guy that's under the IT group. At some point, you're going to talk to his boss. And the minute you say Cat 5, I know you think it sounds petty. I'm not the one being petty. Your audience is being petty because they're judging you and they're internally rolling their eyes at that. Oh, that AV guy, they don't know nothing about the network. You don't want to be that person. It's 2019.
I think this is a really important point because it kind of straddles both the technology and sales part, where I hear a lot on this podcast, get educated about IT.
Yeah.
Because we need to work with them. But from the sales point of view, it's like, talk the same way that your customer is talking. And if your customer is in IT, then you should be using the same terms of them. So I think that's a really interesting point you made.
Well, I came from layer one, right? Layer one of the network and structured cabling. And when I went into Pro AV, I was like, oh my God, I'm not even on a layer now. So for me to become educated about AV over IP and go, oh, now I'm on layer two or three.
Back in business.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was like, see, now I can throw shade on all my former colleagues in the structured cabling world. Cause I can be like, ha ha, polish my nails. Look, I am above you in the model, you know. I am not, oh yeah, Johnny come lately. They're not even on the network, you know. Nice. To me, it was empowering. It's a good place to be. We're all getting so much better at it. The manufacturers, the integrators. We've all stepped in some bear traps along the way. You know, but where there's pain, sometimes there can also be learning and knowledge. It's not what goes wrong, but how we fix it, you know. So we always figure our way out of that hole. And I think it's a very exciting time to be in the industry. And I have people that are extremely successful on the sales side, that they also have other companies that they run, not even anywhere near the AV, no conflict of interest, that they could easily go off and run those companies. But this is such an exciting time to be in the industry, and they understand the value of where we are, that they really want to be a part of this. And sure, they want to stick around long enough that they get to enjoy and reap the benefits. Because when you empower, when you leverage a software solution to increase the to lower the mean time to resolution for the operational ability of a conference room, you become your client's hero, or even to empower their own people. Yeah. If they're, you know, a Fortune 1000 and they have their own IT help desk that does all the tier one troubleshooting, even empowering them so that they're better. It's just like loving something and setting it free and having it come back to you tenfold, right? It's a very positive experience. Instead of your clients hating on you because your programmer is tied up and you have got to wait for him to come free, or you got to bring in somebody else. Oh, no, you can't, because he's the one that did the code. It really, you want that consistency. It needs to be him. And then there's a truck roll involved. And we can have somebody out there in 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, next week. The clients, some are, I mean, they might be okay because you've developed amazing rapport, your service writer, whomever, right? But there's a little bit of resentment, especially when they catch heat from whatever senior level manager loves to use that conference room. Or invariably, it's the boardroom. That's the one room that always seems to be, because it has most of the bells and whistles, the most problems, and also the most necessity for like seven nines of uptime, right?
Right.
To the point that they even have someone sit in and babysit the meeting to make sure that they don't mess it up, or act as an operator for the meeting, you know, like in an executive briefing center, just because we don't want the presenter to mess anything up. We've got to have a subject matter expert on how to operate the room. Woo.
Bring that a book.
It should be an oxymoron, right? That,
bring,
why should that?
Read.
Right, because it's not intuitive enough, but it happens. But no, this is the exciting time. Clients are very receptive to the features and benefits that we can offer them now. Yeah. They're much more open to it. And I think the power of partnerships, one of the things with Utelligy that I've been hearing the most positive response would definitely be the Zoom integration.
Okay.
Because oftentimes Zoom goes into larger than a huddle room, where maybe they do want to control shades and lighting and stuff like that. And so Utelligy has figured out a way to do that through leveraging their platform that just adds another button that brings up another page that has all those other controls, but otherwise still has that clean user interface. It is the hallmark of Zoom.
Right.
The same with the Cisco Touch 10, a little bit different on the Touch 10 side. We do it through the codec, actually, but they, you know, Cisco gives away those touch panels. So, you might as well still be able to use them, and they can, but yet they can get a more, you know, a more full-fledged, what we would,
more
what for us, yeah.
Integration, right?
Integration. Stuff that is second nature to us, but yet they want to leverage that Touch 10 with whatever codec platform, and having that visibility. Clients love that. They love visibility. They love being able to see their assets. They love being able to know what's working, what's not working. They love being able to set up triggers so that something is self-healing and they don't even have to realize there was ever a problem. It just solved itself, but yet there's still a record of it.
Yeah.
This is something that they're like, oh, they don't even ask for it because they don't even know it's a possibility.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and then once you tell them it's a possibility, they're like, ooh, they're always intrigued.
Yeah, yeah.
They're intrigued. They get excited because, I mean, you know, they're the ones having to explain why they need a new golf cart because the other golf cart is end of life because they've got all their crew, their posse trying to manage a campus scenario. That's the guys that handle campuses. I've got the most empathy for them because they're physically running everywhere and driving and running.
You know? Always in good shape. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. They're getting their steps in. But they're also IT guys. They're geeks, or they're AV IT guys, whatever, right? If they could do it from the comfort of their desk, oh, my God.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like a, you know, or standing at the comfort of their desk, whatever.
Sure.
I encourage good ergonomics. Sit, stand. I can tell you're standing.
I'm standing.
I know you are. So yeah, but that, right? They would love that because, you know, they like being efficient, or even if they get an alert and it's the weekend and they're not even scheduled, if they can manage that from a URL, you know, that's really powerful. That's meaningful. That's the good things that software can bring. And a lot of that is here today. The majority of that is here today.
Absolutely. And it's coming from different places. So there are obviously IT solutions. Normal software as a service companies are providing some of the things you mentioned, but I agree with you. It's definitely still an exciting time in AV because it hasn't been decided yet. I think it's easy to fall into the trap of it's all doom and gloom. IT is just going to take over and we'll have nothing more to do. But I think anybody who has AV domain expertise can still bring a lot to the table because we have that analog. Everything, something happens in the room at some point. It's not all over structured cabling. At some point,
it's not.
Connects with people. And I think that's the exciting part about right now is merging that with this IT space.
You will never get away. There is so much that I, you know, after all this time, still am not an expert on. I will never be an audio expert. I have a general understanding. I respect all the engineers and audio experts that I work with, right? But it is a science, people, you know, I mean, period.
Yeah.
And audio is part science, part art, quite frankly. You know, it's that unique blend of both. As we know, right? We all listen to music, or I would assume most of us listen to music. So, you know, audio is one of those things. And there's a lot of that, you know, because I have people that maybe they want to put a 98-inch display in a room. Well, there's still a use case for two-piece projection. And with the maturation and the evolution from going from lamp-based projectors to solid-state laser-based projectors that can go for 10,000 hours and they don't have consumables, they may or may not have a filter, they probably don't, most of them don't now, where you can set it and forget it, and the fall-off is actually much more incremental than they were in lamp-based projection. If I'm telling you that you need 135-inch diagonal because what you look at mostly is Excel spreadsheets, I'm not telling you that because I'm in love with two-piece projection. I'm telling you that because that's going to be the best thing for you.
Yeah.
Because you're telling me that you look at this stuff in 8-hour meetings, you're going to have so much eye strain from trying to look at this on this 98-inch display when you need at least 135-inch diagonal. And having respect for that.
It's exhausting, right? I mean, you will physically make that meeting inefficient.
Yeah, and so that kind of goes to education.
Yeah.
And you know, I love, you know, hacks. I love IKEA hacks. I love people that can hack stuff. I like smart IT people that can kind of hack a solution together. I love that they like doing that. But there is a lot to be said for the knowledge base within the Pro AV world. I think there will always be a relevance. And I think part of that is just having a big picture. I'm seeing a lot of good things from a lot of our regional as well as national integrators in terms of how they're trying to evolve the programs they're putting in place, whether they're, you know, leveraging, they might be smaller, but they're part of a larger, you know, global organization.
Okay.
That maybe used to be a national organization and mm-hmm. they want to have, you know, a resource in Belarus because maybe their client has one there. And now they do through these organizations and these partnerships. Sure. And having an understanding that we are a global supply chain and knowing which manufacturers you can get where. Oh, this is interesting. So I have a client of mine. They are a company that helps people with their taxes based out of California. And they have a lot going on in Brazil. For them, if one of their VTC codecs goes down, it takes weeks and possibly bribes to get a replacement codec into Brazil, let's say, all right, yeah. Where they've got a large presence. Whereas they've got a dozen PCs sitting on the shelf. So if they could just spin up a soft codec that they've already invested in the platform,
sure.
Now they basically almost have a hot swappable solution, right? Or a very low downtime replacement that's not taking them several weeks. So that goes to what you were saying about the power of the PC and stuff being PC-based. And I know Pro AV people are very snobby. they don't like to hear it, but all of our proprietary black boxes, for the most part, are little PCs. They're just locked down and branded. I hate to tell y'all that, but you understand there's chips. It's a PC,
it's
people.
The same thing. Yeah.
It is. I mean, I had the one manufacturer that said, hey, we came up with this platform and we put it on a Dell. Why did you even do it? And look,
why bother?
I'm like, yeah, but it's still locked down. And why just brand it with your name? Because you have an excellent reputation within our industry. Putting Dell on it just means when it goes into the end user's environment, their Cisco person's going to like give them a total hard time. Like, what is that Dell device doing, right? In my beautiful Cisco environment. Whereas if it had your name on it, they don't even know who you are, or they don't care. It doesn't upset them, right? But if they see one of their competitors, quote unquote, sneaking in when they're not. So it's things like that, you know, like we always look at things differently than the IT people. But there is a lot of power to being able, and especially because now you can get a very robust little Intel Nook, you know, put all kinds of good stuff on it. And it just doesn't cost that much, you know, it's a good thing.
Definitely. So let's wrap things up here. It's been a great conversation. Do you have any final thoughts?
What final thoughts? I'm a big fan of your podcast. I let you know that for a long time.
Thank you.
I listen. No, I think it's great what you're doing. I love that you are a champion of this, have awareness. I love the whole American in Germany spin that you get to put on it. You know, I love that, right? A strange American in a strange land, a fish out of water. But that's the great thing about software is you can be anywhere in the world to do software. I mean, it is a global world. I think that this is a very, an interesting time. It is, you know, as we always say in the utility world, you know, it's the equivalent of when we went from the digital PBX to VoIP, right? On the telephony world. Mm. I lived through that. I was at Graybar at the time. I used to sell Texas A&M, all their Mitel phones. And it was funny because it was just like it is now, not on my network, you know?
Yeah.
To my point, I don't really think we're leveraging the client's existing infrastructure per se on a network cabling basis in terms of inducing traffic onto their existing cable plant. I just look at it like we are trying to make our AV assets look and act and feel just like, and be able to be managed just like your IT assets. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the value that we're providing through leveraging software. So instead of running a proprietary cable, you're running a cable. It's a Category 6 cable with RJ45 jacks. It already looks and acts and feels. You know exactly how it looks and acts and feels, right? So you're comfortable with that. You know what a cable drop costs you. I look at it more along those lines, as we're just going to look and act and feel. It doesn't mean we're not still special. It doesn't mean we're not still the crown jewels in the IT, tiara, because we are. We are the fun stuff. Any active component is sexier than, you know, I don't know, an angled patch panel. Let's be realistic, folks. You know, wow, look at my sexy wire manager. Wah, wah, wah. Come on, guys. You know, so we are still the fun stuff. We're the stuff that makes people's lives better or worse, right? Conversely. Yeah. But we are the ones that add to a richer, deeper experience. Absolutely. And so I'm glad that I am in Pro V. I think it is an exciting time. Some people, and nothing happens. I mean, we still have clients with VGA. Let's not kid ourselves. Just because the shift has been going on for a while. You know, I learned about analog sunset back in 2011. So, you know, and it had already happened, quote unquote. So, you know, it takes a long time. So plenty of people will still be around. They might not go out of business. They might just have less business if they don't want to change, you know, or their business model may change a little bit and they may just end up retiring or selling to somebody that does want to change it. I don't know. That's certainly a thought. But no, this is a good time. It's a good time to be in Pro AV, but I don't know. I would tell everybody to try and keep an open mind. That's all. And respect that just because something is different, it doesn't mean it's better or worse than what you're currently doing. It's just different. but things are going to change and they're going to be different. And so try to embrace that change so that it's more enjoyable and less painful to you.
Great message. Thanks. Thank you very much. If anybody would like to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
Oh, I'm on LinkedIn, Michelle Lorette. I'm on Twitter.
You're on Twitter? Kitchen.
I am. And I also have a podcast, mostly AV podcast, with my friends, Jerry and David. So check out my podcast, Shameless Podcast Plug.
Mostly AV was called, right?
Mostly very AV. Cool.
All right, Michelle, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Take care. I appreciate it.
If you or anyone on your staff ever considered themselves just an AV programmer, join the club. That's how I used to feel. I was just an AMX programmer or just a Crestron programmer, whatever language of your choice is, whatever it may be. There's generally this feeling in AV that we're not capable of using modern programming languages. And it simply isn't true. Sure, there's a learning curve, but once you get through it, all other languages become easier to learn, and it just expands the amount of options you have when designing a system. It's not an either-or decision. You don't say, I won't be using these manufacturer tools anymore. It's just you have a broader palette to choose from. And here's what Mark Day, founder of IdeaBox, had to say about his experience with the online courses at learnavprogramming.com.
You know, Patrick, it's funny how the smallest things can sometimes be the start of really big ideas. Before I took the learnavprogramming.com courses, I was in that proprietary, I'm only a control system programmer kind of mindset, right? When it came to new technologies or current technologies like JavaScript or things like that, for some reason, I thought that was different from what I'm doing. And what taking your courses flipped for me was not so much what I learned technically taking the courses. It was the mindset of, oh, wait a second, I'm already doing 99% of what some of these most modern programmers are doing. I just have to learn, the other 1%. And that's really what I did. So it's really been kind of a big change after taking the course. And I would really recommend this course to any integrator. Not only will it obviously help their skill set, but more importantly, it might change their whole mindset, which is more important, and really show them new opportunities, open the door so they kind of see problems through a different lens. I gotta tell you, one of the biggest changes for me was as soon as I taught myself HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and saw the UIs that I can make with those technologies, I just couldn't sell a Crestron touch panel again.
Mark is a great example of somebody who takes new information and really applies it. I know that Mark still sells a lot of Crestron equipment, but for him, for his company, for his customers, for his business, he needed a better UI. He needed another option for a user interface, and modern programming allowed him to do that. So the question is, how can you use modern programming to improve your business? Please go to learnavprogramming.com, and wherever you see a sign up button, go ahead and sign up and you'll get some free information to get a feel of my learning style and what kind of information is available. And of course, it would be an honor to have you enroll in one of our courses and help you upgrade your skills and take this industry to the next level. Thanks for listening to Software Defined Survival. I hope you found it useful and maybe it inspires you to try out something new this week. If you have any questions, go to softwaredefinedsurvival.com and click the appropriate button. I'd love to answer your questions on the air. And if you'd like to help spread the word, please subscribe, comment, and share it with your friends. Thanks.